Welcome to today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Monday, March 25th. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker, and here is our first story. Hills Elementary's fate to be decided Tuesday. Supporters of school with large immigrant population urge Iowa City District to keep it open. This is by Grace King out of Hills. The Iowa City School Board will vote Tuesday on the recommendation by district officials to close Hills Elementary School at the end of this year. But families of children in the school, past, present, and future, are asking the school board to keep Hills Elementary open. It is the only school in the town of about 1,000 residents and also serves a large immigrant population. Mete Flores was thrilled with the idea of sending her daughter, Valeria Reyes Flores, 5, to kindergarten at Hills next year. Now she is uncertain what school Valeria will attend in the fall and disheartened by the potential loss of the Hills Elementary community. Hills Elementary is one of the most diverse schools in the Iowa City Community School District. About 36% of students at Hills are Hispanic or Latino, and more than 13% are Black, according to the U.S. News and World Report. About 70% of students at Hills are economically disadvantaged. Flores lives in Kohl's Mobile Home Court in Iowa City, which is in the Hills Elementary attendance boundary. Hills also serves families in the city of Hills, parts of rural Johnson County, and Regency Mobile Home Park in Iowa City. At school, the children feel like their culture is valued, said Flores, who had 2 other children grow up in the Iowa City Community School District. It's really hard for them being between 2 different cultures because it's another world outside your house. They're a part of 2 different worlds, Flores said. Residents within the Hills attendance boundary, including Hills Mayor Tim Kemp, are frustrated that Iowa City school officials have not talked to them about the potential closure of the school. The time between the recommendation, February 27th, and a school board vote Tuesday is less than 30 days. The Iowa City School Board is expected to vote Tuesday on whether to close Hills Elementary, one of several recommendations made by school leaders as they prepare to trim $7.5 million in district expenses over the next 2 years. Closing Hills Elementary at 301 Main Street in Hills would save the district about $1.66 million a year, according to board documents. The more than 100 students enrolled there would be sent to different elementary schools, likely Alexander and Weber Elementaries, Superintendent Matt Degner said during a board meeting last month. Kemp said that's a drop in the bucket of the district's overall budget. During the 2024 fiscal year, which ends June 30th, the district laid out a $319 million spending plan. If Hills closes, its teachers and staff would have the option of being reassigned to another school in the district, and students still would have access to the services they get now at Hills, school officials said. Marcela Hurtado, the mother of a second grader at Hills Elementary, said the teachers and staff at Hills know the kids and their families well. She feels safe and comfortable sending her son to the school that is about a 15-minute bus ride from his home. Hurtado and other Latino families say their kids speak both English and Spanish at school, which supports the fluency of both languages. Hurtado lives in Regency Mobile Home Park. Her son, Yermejo Rodriguez Hurtado, 8, is very intelligent, Hurtado said. He's a year ahead in math. Yermejo started a chess club at Hills and a reading group. He looks forward to 5th grade when he can start playing violin as part of the music curriculum. Yermejo doesn't understand why he might have to go to a different elementary school next year. His mother worries a new school will mean larger class sizes and less individualized attention from his teacher. Hills has a good structure for immigrant people, Hurtado said. Deb Dunkes, founder and volunteer with Open Heartland, a nonprofit that serves Latino immigrant families in Johnson County, said students feel tremendously positive in the ways their culture is celebrated at Hills. I know a lot of families who are potentially going to be impacted by this. Life as an immigrant here in Iowa is very difficult. Every day is full of a lot of challenges that if you're white and have an established life here, you just don't face, Dunkes said. They found a place where their kids are thriving, where they feel like they are safe, and that is potentially being taken away with no explanation. Instead, it's just being done to them, and that doesn't seem right, Dunkhays said. If the school closes, it will be a blow to the community, Mayor Kemp said. I don't think the town will dry up and die, he said. We're a vital community. We've grown by 35% since the 2010 census. Having the school is an incentive for people to live and work in the town, but I don't think it's going to become a ghost town just because the school leaves. But closing the elementary school could be the start of a dangerous trend that could lead to more school closures, Kemp said. At a school board meeting last month, school leaders did talk about the possibility of future closings as Iowa's schools continue to face decades of underfunding. We're focusing on Hills tonight, but we are going to have to look at retiring more schools potentially next year, school board member Lisa Williams said in a school board meeting February 27th. Superintendent Degner said there are no recommendations at this time to close any of the district's other elementary schools. Kemp and other Hills residents said if Hills Elementary closes, families might choose to open enroll their children into neighboring Highland or Lone Tree school districts or use state-funded private school tuition assistance to send their children to private school. Today, 8 students are open enrolled into Lone Tree and 20 students into Highland school districts from the Iowa City District. This wouldn't be an option for many families, however, that rely on school transportation. Today, some Hills residents feel like the Iowa City School District broke its promise. Residents approved 2 measures in November of 2021 that extended the school district's physical plant and equipment levy to 2035 and a 1% local option sales tax to 2051. Renewing the levies, provides funding for the facility's master plan that includes dozens of projects, including the recommendation that a new elementary school be built in Hills. In 2022, the Iowa City School Board approved construction of a new elementary school in Hills after months of debate over whether the district should maintain a school in the town. The project was part of a facility master plan that would replace the 50-year-old building. It was originally supposed to be completed by summer 2025. In a letter to the school board in August of 2022, Deputy Superintendent Chance Ramey wrote that while closing Hills Elementary could potentially result in short-term financial gain, it is not overall fiscally responsible to close it. Ramey said officials anticipate housing growth in the southern part of Iowa City and Hills over the next 15 years. Hills City Administrator Adrienne Sedlicek said the community has grown since the 2020 census from 872 residents to about 1,000. There are 10 lots available for construction, and 52 new single-family or small apartment buildings have been built in the area since 2020. Hills Elementary School sits on just over 7 acres of land owned by the Iowa City School District. It was valued last year at $6.9 million, according to the Johnson County Assessor's Office. The school building itself was built in the 1960s by Liberty Township as a standalone elementary school. A new state law required the school be part of a K-12 system. Iowa City, Lone Tree, and Highland school districts all wanted the elementary school, Kemp said. The Iowa City School District proposed that Hills Elementary students would feed into West High School, which opened in 1968. Hills residents liked that idea. It was a huge selling point, Kemp said. The community chose to be part of the Iowa City School District, and the building was sold to the district for $1, assuming we would be a part of the Iowa City Community School District forever, Kemp said. A 2003 decision by the Iowa City School Board to redistrict students living in the Lake Ridge Mobile Home Park from Hills Elementary to Twain Elementary led to a decline in enrollment at Hills from 254 students in the 2022-03 to 194 the next year. Julie Van Dyke, a former Hills resident, estimates she has attended hundreds of meetings over the years related to school boundary changes in the Iowa City School District. The Lake Ridge families left Hills Elementary kicking and screaming, Van Dyke said. Every time the school changed boundaries, they would take off another piece of the Hills enrollment area, Van Dyke said. Liz Kelly, who owns Above and Beyond Heating and Air Conditioning with her husband, is frequently in Iowa City schools for career days and mock interviews. Their company offers an apprenticeship for high school students. Although Kelly lives in Hills, several school boundary changes prompted the family to open enroll their children into Mid Prairie Community School District, which is a 30-minute drive. "I didn't want the uncertainty," Kelly said. Still, Above and Beyond has prioritized donating to Hills Elementary over the years, including financial donations, auctioning off their services to raise money for the school, and purchasing school supplies for educators. "It's crucial for us to do our part," Kelly said. Now she wonders how closing the elementary school could affect the community and property values. "As a business, why would I continue to go out of my way for the Iowa City School District when every action they take shows they do not value the Hills community or the devastation they would cause?" Kelly said. Hills Elementary was shown to have the highest operating cost of elementary schools in the Iowa City School District in 2011. At the time, the school board made it clear it believed Hills Elementary was financially inefficient, the Gazette reported at the time. The superintendent at the time, Stephen Murley, told the school board he would not recommend closing the elementary school. Heather Dahl is a parent to two children in the Iowa City School District. Her husband grew up in Hills, and they wanted to raise their sons in the tight-knit community, she said. A few years ago, they moved from Hills to Lone Tree, about 10 miles away, but they open enrolled to stay at Hills Elementary. "We couldn't imagine taking them out of that school," Dahl said. Dahl's youngest, Dylan Dahl, now is a fifth grader at Hills Elementary and will be going to middle school next year, but Dahl doesn't want to see Hills Elementary close. "A big part of many families' decision to move to Hills is the elementary school," Dahl said. "They feel safe and comfortable having their children walk to school in a small community where everyone looks out for each other," she said. James DeWitt has two children at Hills Elementary, a daughter, Everly, 8, in third grade, and a son, Callan, 5, in kindergarten. "They love it here," DeWitt said. "My daughter is picking up a lot of Spanish. The school staff are phenomenal and take a lot of time to get to know the children individually." The next story, family suing over Lynn jail death. Mallory Hultz died of withdrawal in March of 2022. This is by Emily Anderson out of Cedar Rapids. The family of a Cedar Rapids woman who died in the Lynn County Jail 2 years ago has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Lynn County, the Lynn County Sheriff, and all jail staffers. The lawsuit, filed last week in Lynn County District Court by Christy Caldwell on behalf of her daughter, Mallory Hultz, alleges that Hultz, 31, did not receive a proper medical screening when she was checked into the jail on March 23, 2022, after she was arrested on charges of domestic abuse assault. Hultz died early the next morning after spending the night in the cell. According to an investigative report, she died from complications of chronic substance use. Caldwell called 911 on March 23rd after she came home from work to find Hultz fighting with Caldwell's husband. Hultz also attacked Caldwell and knocked her glasses from her face, according to the suit. Hultz had been taking several medications related to mental health and some for celiac disease and for Guillain-Barré syndrome, an autoimmune disease that had been recently diagnosed. Sorry, I'm trying to find where the article continues. Here we go. Caldwell thought Hultz's aggressive behavior was tied to her medications and called 911, hoping that her daughter would be taken to a hospital for treatment. Cedar Rapids police officers instead took Hultz to the Lynn County Jail on domestic abuse charges. She was booked into the jail by two corrections officers, Drew Wertner and Jemmy Navarro, who are both listed as defendants in the lawsuit. Also named in the lawsuit are Tia Finley, a nurse at the jail, and Sheriff Brian Gardner. Hultz told the officers about her celiac disease and Guillain-Barré syndrome, but didn't fill out her intake paperwork, the lawsuit states. Sometime between 6:20 p.m. when Hultz was booked and 9:27 p.m. when medications were dropped off for Hultz, she was seen by Finley, a nurse who observed that Hultz was agitated and not consolable. The encounter with the nurse was not documented, according to the lawsuit. Video footage showed Hultz vomiting into a toilet after receiving her medications, the lawsuit states. At 12:41 a.m., video footage shows Hultz appearing to have a seizure. She was found unresponsive at 2:12 a.m. and taken to Mercy Medical Center, where she was pronounced dead at 3:16 a.m. The autopsy by the Iowa State Medical Examiner found withdrawal from alcohol and benzodiazepine, a type of controlled substance, was the likely cause of Holt's death. One of Holt's prescriptions was for clonazepam, a member of the benzodiazepine family of drugs. The autopsy referenced low post-mortem levels of clonazepam, the lawsuit states. The lawsuit asserts jail staff should have conducted a more thorough health screening when Holtz arrived at the jail, and that if they had, they would have recognized the symptoms of withdrawal and summoned medical treatment for Holtz. Holtz's family sought a professional opinion report included in the lawsuit from Dr. Ryan Harrington, a Wisconsin doctor who has worked in correctional settings. Harrington stated the jail had not followed best practices as outlined by the National Commission on Correctional Health Care. Alcohol and benzodiazepine withdrawal syndromes have treatment options that are known to be effective, he wrote. Mortality from alcohol and or benzodiazepine withdrawal, accordingly, is a preventable outcome. Ms. Holtz, however, was never placed in a position of advantage at the jail to recover from by way of treatment and survive her alcohol and benzodiazepine withdrawal because, contrary to standard of care, no one knew she was in withdrawal. And no one knew Ms. Holtz was in withdrawal because no one looked to see if she was in withdrawal, which is why her death is so shameful. Holtz was one of seven people who died while in custody at the Linn County Jail between 2020 and 2022. Two of the deaths were suicides, one was from an overdose, and four, including Holtz, were ruled medical deaths by the sheriff's office. The two-year anniversary of Mallory's death has inflicted immeasurable pain on our family, compounded by the knowledge that her death was entirely preventable, Caldwell said in a news release about the lawsuit. Our pursuit of justice is not merely for Mallory, but for the entire community. I'm going to turn to the Iowa Today Government Notes section. Final open house set for Westside Library. Also, State Board awards incentives to Danisco for expansion in Cedar Rapids. This is by Marissa Payne. OPN Architects and the Cedar Rapids Public Library invite the public to the final open house for the new Westside Library. The informational event will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. today at the Ladd Library, 3750 Williams Boulevard Southwest. Participants will be able to see renderings of the library design and overall site plan and orientation. Attendees also will be able to ask the architects and library staff questions and learn more about the project. This newly built facility near the corner of Wiley Boulevard Southwest and 20th Avenue Southwest will replace the Ladd Library, which is in a leased space. It will be larger than the Ladd Library and will include more community rooms and additional space for partners using the Opportunity Center. In partnership with the Cedar Rapids Parks and Recreation Department, a public park is being developed to be built alongside the new library. More information on the project is available online at crlibrary.org/westside. Through the design process, the library has received public input through open houses, surveys, and interviews. Linn County entities update homeless systems deal. The Linn County Board of Supervisors this month updated the joint agreement among the county, the City of Cedar Rapids, and the Housing Fund for Linn County for a new homeless systems manager. The manager will collaborate with local providers to streamline gaps in serving the growing population of people experiencing homelessness. This position was created based on one of the recommendations from the Washington, D.C.-based National Alliance to End Homelessness, which the city enlisted to assess local systems this summer. This manager would not provide social services, but instead would look to improve the overall network of supports for the unhoused population. The amendment changes the funding term to begin April 1st and end March 31st, 2027. Each local government entity is contributing $75,000 per year for a total of $450,000 over a three-year term. A Homeless Systems Strategy and Support Committee will provide support and feedback to the Homeless Systems Manager and meet regularly, at least quarterly. It will be made up of the following agency representatives: Cedar Rapids staff, one person. Linn County staff, one person. United Way of East Central Iowa, one person. And Housing Fund for Linn County, one person. This is separate from the local oversight board that will review local data, make program and funding recommendations to funding agencies, and direct the manager. This panel also was recommended by the National Alliance to End Homelessness. This group also will meet on a regular basis, at least quarterly. It will be made up of 1 Cedar Rapids staff, 1 Linn County staff, 2 data professionals from hospitals, colleges, insurance companies, 2 immigrant refugee representatives, 2 individuals with lived experience, and 1 local funding agency. The amendment to this agreement will come before the Cedar Rapids City Council on its consent agenda Tuesday. Items there are considered routine, non-controversial matters that are approved in a single vote with no discussion. Incentives for Danisco's Cedar Rapids expansion. The Iowa Economic Development Authority Board on Friday awarded Danisco, a subsidiary of International Flavors and Fragrances, incentives for an expansion of its Cedar Rapids plant at 1041st Avenue Drive Southwest. The company manufactures enzymes for biofuels, production to be used in food, animal nutrition, and household products. Its new facility would be a 9,000-square-foot metal building used as a steam generation plant. The total investment in Danisco's application for assistance through the state's High Quality Jobs Program is just over $19 million, marketing and communications team lead Kanan Kappelman said in an email. The capital investment, which excludes a research development credit, totals about $17 million. The project is expected to create at least 2 jobs at a qualifying wage of $31.44 per hour. State incentives awarded were an investment tax credit and sales and use tax refund totaling $409,516. Derecho damaged stones replaced on memorial. 3 new pieces of granite have been added to the Veterans Memorial at Johnson County. The new pieces replace 159 inscriptions that were damaged in the derecho in August of 2020. The memorial was established by the Johnson County Board of Supervisors in January 2013 and dedicated on Veterans Day in 2013. Since then, it has expanded its reach, standing as a permanent place of honor for the now 1,022 veterans whose names are inscribed on the stones. To continue honoring veterans and preserving their legacies, the memorial welcomes new orders for recognition. Veterans do not need to be Johnson County residents to be honored. The cost to inscribe the name of an honored veteran is $200. An order form, veteran biographies, and the history of the memorial are available at johnsoncountyiowa.gov/memorial. The Veterans Memorial is a collaborative effort among various county departments, including the Board of Supervisors, the Veterans Affairs Commission, and the Information Technology and Physical Plant Departments. Iowa City Bridge replacement work begins this week. Iowa City has announced that, weather permitting, work on the Gilbert Street Bridge replacement project will begin Friday. Construction is expected to last until late fall. The work is being broken into several phases. Full road closures of East Court Street at its intersection with Gilbert Street are planned as part of the first phase of work. A detour will be posted Friday. South Gilbert Street is expected to remain open during the first phase of construction, but traffic delays are likely. A full detour route will be announced before a closure begins. All vehicle and pedestrian detours will be clearly marked with signage. All changes in vehicle parking also will be clearly marked and communicated with residents and businesses in the project area ahead of construction work commencing. For more information about the project, you can get that at icgov.org. And educators honored for engaging young learners. 5 local educators were recently selected as recipients of the Robert E. Yeager Active Learning Award by the Iowa Children's Museum. This award recognizes educators who dedicate themselves to facilitating active learning and providing opportunities for kids to become engaged learners, innovative thinkers, and creative problem solvers. We're thrilled to celebrate these amazing educators who spark curiosity and excitement in young learners through hands-on activities, Iowa Children's Museum Executive Director Jeff Capps said. As we gear up for our 25th anniversary this November, it's crucial to recognize the teachers in our community who bring fun and interactive learning into the classroom every day, just like we've been doing for nearly 25 years. The 2024 honorees recognized for their work are Annika Buell, Garner Elementary School in North Liberty, Ann Creasy, Willow Wind School in Iowa City, Karen Johnson, Tipton Elementary School in Tipton, Barbara Goodwin, Good Shepherd Center in Iowa City, and Gus Creech, Oak Hill Elementary School in Tiffin. This award is presented in memory of University of Iowa Professor Emeritus and world-renowned educator Robert Yeager, who lived from 1930 to 2019. Yeager devoted his career to empowering educators to inspire students to learn through active engagement with concepts and hands-on materials. And now we're going to turn to our insight section, opinion section, with the community letters. Our first letter is from Larry Stone of Elkader. Water's fouled by nutrients in Iowa. It's bound to happen. Oops, somebody forgot to shut the valve, so 265,000 gallons of toxic agricultural chemicals, liquid nitrogen fertilizer, drained into the East Nishnabotna River south of Red Oak. Gee, sorry about that. Sad that some aquatic life died. But golly, it's partly Mother Nature's fault. She caused the drought that made the river water too low for dilution is the solution to pollution to help. Ah, the Nish wasn't a prime stream anyway, since it was channelized a century ago. Probably not many critters still live there besides a few carp and catfish. Biologists will try to count the dead ones. That's how they calculate a slap-on-the-wrist fine. Eventually, some fish might even return. Maybe even some frogs and snakes and water bugs? Unless there happens to be another oops. And the farm well your kids drink? Maybe Walmart has a sale on bottled water. Certainly don't try to compare the lowly Nish with real streams like Bloody Run Creek in the opposite corner of the state. Now that's an outstanding Iowa water, barring, of course, another oops from 8,000 or 10,000 cattle the Department of Natural Resources has allowed to be penned at its headwaters. But when Iowa brags about feeding the world and producing ethanol to fuel its cars, industrial agriculture accidents are bound to happen. Breaking news, the East Nish loses again when gasoline leaks from an overfilled underground tank in Atlantic. Does anyone care about Iowa water? And again, that was from Larry Stone of Elkader. Our next letter, our other letter, is from David Huddle of Cedar Rapids. Jay Ambrose is wrong. Biden's economy works. Jay Ambrose's March 19th syndicated column would have made Tennessee Williams scream mendacity. In it, Ambrose spouts typical right-wing nonsense, ignoring obvious factual information. Too correct. First, economic analyst Stephen Ratner reported that according to the Economist, since the end of 2019, the American economy has grown about 8%, while the European Union has grown about 3%. Japan, 1%, and Britain, not at all. Ratner and economist Brendan Duke reported that entrepreneurship in the U.S. is booming, with 5.2 million likely employer business applications filed between January 2021 and December 2023, more than a 33% increase over those filed between 2017 and 2019. Economists Justin Wolfers and Aaron Duby noted that, as Wolfers wrote, "For the first time in forever, real wage gains are going to those who need them most. Wages have gone up for all but the top 20% of Americans whose wages have fallen, reducing inequality." Furthermore, Ambrose blathers that the tax rate the wealthy pay is the highest in the first world. But because most of the pay is untaxed as stock options, the wealthy do not pay the highest taxes in the first world. It is estimated that since 1980, around $50 trillion has shifted from the lower and middle class population to the top 1% of the population. There is nothing wrong with the Biden economy. It works for everyone. And again, that was from David Huddle of Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the Cedar Rapids Gazette on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we will turn to today's obituaries. Judith O'Connor Decker, 82, of North Liberty, passed away Friday, March 22nd. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 26th, at Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Solon, located at 100 South Cedar Street, lower level. Funeral Mass will be 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, March 27th, at the Newman Catholic Student Center in Iowa City. Burial to follow in Ridgewood Cemetery, North Liberty. A full obituary can be viewed and online condolences left for the family at www.broshchapel.com. Keith Gerard Klein passed away Thursday, March 21st, of Iowa City. He was surrounded by his wife and children after a short illness. To celebrate Keith's life, the family will greet friends Wednesday, March 27th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Lensing Funeral Service in Iowa City. The complete obituary and online condolences may be shared at www.lensingfuneral.com. Riali Ann Wingert of Boise, Idaho, was born August 7, 1970, at Richards Gebauer AFB in Missouri to Nicholas Frederick Brown and Susan Carol Harder Brown. Moving with her military family, she lived briefly in Florida, Mississippi, Colorado, and Idaho, eventually settling in Iowa. She participated in band, orchestra, and marching band through junior high and high school, playing bassoon in the Iowa All-State Band and Orchestra. She graduated from Jefferson High School in 1988 in Cedar Rapids. Her college career began at Idaho State University in Pocatello, Idaho, where she met and married Nathan Charles Wingert, August 7, 1992. After Nathan completed his master's degree, they moved to Boise, bought a home, and began a family. Their son Charles Frederick Wingert was born February 1, 2003. Charlie was the love of her life, and her focus was on introducing him to the adventures available in the world. Growing up with a dad who enjoyed puttering with old sports cards, Riali Ann found herself the owner of a vintage Morris Mini, which began her involvement with everything Mini, car clubs, rallies, drives, and other Mini owners around the world. She was happiest driving her car with her two guys. She also completed her RN degree, worked for the local independent bookstore, took up sewing, quilting, and fabric collection, played bassoon with the Meridian Symphony, and surrounded their house with habitat for the birds and squirrels. Her home was taken over by numerous felines. Through all her interests, she touched the lives of hundreds of friends. Riali Ann passed away March 7th at the age of 53 after a short battle with liver disease. She is survived by her husband Nathan, son Charlie, and parents Nicholas and Susan Brown, all of Boise, Idaho. Her ashes will be interred at Morris Hill Cemetery in Boise. Sharon Beckler Blakely, 65, of Wayland, died Tuesday, February 27th, as the result of an accident in Mesa, Arizona, while wintering in Arizona. A celebration of her life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 6th, at Bethel Church north of Wayland. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, April 5th, also at the church. The Beatty Petersheim Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Sister Mary Kurt of Marion, Sister Mary Kurt RSM, age 92, died on Saturday, March 23rd at Halmar Village Care Center in Marion. Services will be held on Wednesday, March 27th at the Chris and Susie DeWolf Family Innovation Center, 9000 C Avenue Northeast, Marion. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m., followed by a funeral mass at 11 a.m. Burial will be at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Arrangements are with TN Funeral Home. Sister Mary was born on January 15, 1932, in Bernard, Iowa. She was the sixth child of 12 children born to John G. and Ella Moorman Kurt. She attended St. Patrick's School in Gary Owen and graduated from Mount Mercy Academy and Mount Mercy College in Cedar Rapids. She entered the Sisters of Mercy on January 20, 1949, and professed her final vows on August 15, 1954. Sister Mary spent 50 years in education in the Archdiocese of Dubuque. She taught at St. John's School in Waterloo, Immaculate Conception School in Elma, St. Joseph's School in Marion, and Sacred Heart in Olwine. After her retirement from teaching, she continued to serve as a classroom volunteer at Sacred Heart School, Olwine, and St. Matthew School in Cedar Rapids. Sister Mary was preceded in death by her parents, three brothers, Henry, Dorrance, and Charles Kurt, four sisters, Germaine Becken, Sister Bernice Kurt, Rita Martin, and Jane Steffen. She's survived by her brothers, Earl, spouse Louetta of Cascade, Tom, spouse Rita of Bernard, and Pete, spouse Mary Jane of Piosta, and her sister, Lois Donovan of Cascade. She is also survived by several nieces and nephews, including Sister Linda Becken, RSM, and other Sisters of Mercy. Memorials may be given to the Sisters of Mercy in Cedar Rapids. Dennis J. Gaulacher, G-A-U-L-O-C-H-E-R, of Iowa City, was 69 when he died peacefully surrounded by his family Friday, March 22nd. A gathering for friends and family will be held from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Thursday, March 28th at Gay and Seehoff Funeral and Cremation Service, with a funeral service to begin at 11 a.m. Burial will take place in the Morse Cemetery. For a complete obituary or to share a thought, memory, or condolence with her family, with the family, please visit the Gay and Seehoff Funeral and Cremation Service website at www.gayandseehoff.com. Michael John Lambert Sr. of Monticello was 76 when he died Friday, March 22nd, at his home surrounded by family after a brief illness. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 27th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Monticello, with interment at the Sacred Heart Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 until 7 Tuesday at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello, where a parish vigil service will start at 4 p.m. Visitation will continue Wednesday morning at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church from 10 until 11 a.m. Father Paul Baldwin will officiate at the services. By visiting GetchOnline.com, you may share your thoughts, memories, and condolences with Mike's family. Surviving are his four children, Angie Lambert Cox, Mike Jr., spouse Shannon, Joe, spouse Sarah, Tara, spouse Scott Brighton, and 12 grandchildren, Austin, Dylan, Lily, Maggie, Carson, Jordan, Hine, Madison, Jordan Hine, Madison, Lauren, Mason, Maisie, Emma, Blaine, and great-granddaughter Navy. His siblings, Patrick Lambert, spouse Jenny, Michelle Glantz, spouse Tom, Patrice Lambert, spouse Bill Hosh, and sister-in-law Sheila Prohl, spouse Jerry, and his loving cat Travis. He was preceded in death by his wife Audrey in 2022, his parents and his in-laws Don and Margaret Huggins. Michael Sr. was born June 23, 1947, at John McDonnell Hospital in Monticello, the son of Laverne and Jacqueline Cotter Lambert. Mike graduated from Sacred Heart High School in 1965. He continued his education at Loras College. Mike served in the Army, 75th Infantry, as an airborne ranger and fought in the Vietnam War. He married the love of his life, Audrey Huggins, on June 7, 1968, at Lake Charles, Louisiana, before he left for Vietnam. When he returned from Vietnam, Mike was a Monticello police officer before his long career at the Anamosa State Penitentiary. He retired there as a captain in 2002. Mike and his family took care of the Avenue of Flags at Sacred Heart Cemetery. He was a member of the VFW, Drill Team, Knights of Columbus, Jones County Ducks Unlimited, Monticello Eagles Club, Monticello Golf Club, and enjoyed hunting and fishing. He loved cruising in his 1931 Ford Model A pickup and showing it off at car shows. He enjoyed spending time at his Lambert's Landing property with friends and family. Joyce A. Bender Cooper, 88 of Solon, passed away peacefully Friday, March 22nd. Celebration of Life services will be held 4 p.m. Saturday, March 30th, at St. John Lutheran Church in Ely. Friends may visit with the family after 2 p.m. until the time of service Saturday at the church. Interment will be held at Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City at a later date. Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Solon is serving the family. Joyce-Anne was born May 31st, 1935 in Clear Lake, the daughter of Orville G. and Pearl S. Walton Olson. She attended Clear Lake High School and then obtained her AA degree from NIAC in Mason City. She taught elementary students for many years. She married Charles R. Bender December 26, 1954. He passed on January 17, 1984. Joyce reunited with her high school sweetheart, Richard L. Cooper, whom she married on November 27, 1991. Joyce enjoyed traveling, quilting, cooking, and baking. She spent many hours volunteering at St. John Lutheran Church in Ely. She loved spending time with her family and especially her many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Joyce is survived by her husband, Richard, children Mark Bender, Jeffrey Bender, Carolyn Lipkammon, Michael Bender, Tim Cooper, and Scott Cooper, 20 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, brother Myron Olson, and several nieces, nephews, and cousins. She's preceded in death by her parents, son Sean A. Bender, brother Dean Olson, and sister Marilyn Dorrance Rosendahl. Memorials may be directed to the family. Patricia Marie Bush, 77 of Marion, passed away Saturday, March 23rd, at home, surrounded by family. Visitation is from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Funeral service at 11:30 a.m. with luncheon to follow on Friday, March 29th, at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Marion. Patricia was born on July 13, 1946, in Maquoketa, the daughter of Curtis D. and Alma H. Yarolem Bickford. She graduated from Maquoketa High School in 1964. She was united in marriage to Randy L. Bush on December 31, 1964, in Maquoketa. Their family was completed with the birth of their children, Todd and Lisa. After Randy completed his service in the U.S. Navy in 1967, the family settled in Marion. Patricia retired from Rockwell Collins after 38 and a half years and genuinely enjoyed her retirement years. In her spare time, she enjoyed reading, puzzles, and word games. She loved spending time with her friends and family, especially her grandchildren. Patricia had been a member of St. Mark's Lutheran Church since 2012. She was dearly loved and will be greatly missed. Survivors include her husband of 59 years, Randy of Marion, two children, Todd, spouse Maria Bush of Marion, and Lisa Johnson of Concord, North Carolina, four grandchildren, Cody and Colton Bush, Zachary and Emma Grace Johnson, and five siblings, Evelyn Current, Jake, spouse Judy Bickford, Dean Bickford, Joyce, spouse Don White, and Brad, spouse Diane Bickford. Memorials may be directed to Camp Courageous or the charity of the donor's choice. Donna Humphrey Jacobs, 86 of Anamosa, passed away on Saturday, March 23rd, at Unity Point Health Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, March 26th, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, where family will greet friends 1 hour prior to service. Burial will follow at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Donna was born on September 22, 1937, in Oregon, where she grew up before moving to Marion and most recently Monticello and Anamosa. On July 3, 1953, she was united in marriage to Wilbur Jacobs and spent 66 anniversaries together until his passing in 2019. Donna enjoyed her friends, playing cards, traveling, camping, wintering in Arizona or Texas, but especially her family. She loved to go to her children's and grandchildren's and great-grandchildren's activities over the past many years. Donna will be greatly missed by all who knew and loved her. Donna is survived and lovingly remembered by her son Mike, spouse Carol, daughter Shelley, two grandsons and their families, Dan, Jenny, Gage, and Kendra, Adam, Jill, Camden, and Colvin, and sisters-in-law Dorothy, spouse Bob Tesdall, and Joy, spouse Steve Wilson. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband Wilbur Jacobs, brother Jim, sister Helen, and brother-in-law Harold. Memorials may be directed to Camp Courageous in Monticello. Jeanette Coder, 90 of Marengo, passed away on March 21st at Compass Memorial Hospital. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services of Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. Jan was born on April 21, 1933, in Cedar Rapids, the daughter of Harry and Hazel Snyder Sproston. She worked for Collins Radio for 42 years. Jan loved to be in charge. She was never afraid to help anyone in need. She went to the grocery store every other day. She enjoyed traveling, word searches, quilting, cross-stitching, and above all, spending time with family and grandkids. She's survived by her daughter, Cynthia, spouse John Drejos, stepchildren, Maureen, Diane, Pam, Ted, and Gary, grandchildren, Tammy, Tina, great-grandchildren, Allie, Emerson, Katie, Jonathan, and Haley, and sister, Jean, spouse Luke Alsop. She was preceded in death by her parents, her first husband, Ted Croy, her second husband, Kenneth Coder, her grandson, Jonathan Paul Drejos, siblings, Robert, Kenneth, Mary Lou, Helen, and Jimmy, and a dog, Diablo. Richard Rick Voss, 76, of Iowa City, passed away Thursday, March 21st, at the University of Iowa Rehabilitation Hospital in Coralville. To celebrate Rick's life, family and friends will gather Saturday, March 30th, at Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City from 3 to 5 p.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be directed to the Rick Voss Memorial Fund. Rick was born October 25, 1947, in Ames to Milo and Doris Doty Peterson Voss. He was a graduate of Ames High School. On June 14, 1980, Rick married Nancy Ann Goh in Iowa City. Rick was a project mechanical engineer for the University of Iowa Design and Construction Department, retiring in 2008. He loved sailing more than anything, but he also enjoyed cooking. Rick was laid back and was never one to make a fuss. His family wants to express their sincere appreciation to the staff of UIHC and the staff at the UI Rehabilitation Hospital for their loving care and support in Rick's final months. He is survived by his wife, Nancy Voss of Iowa City, two sisters, Susan Bodie and Jean Voss, both of Iowa City, two brothers, Chuck Voss of Des Moines, and Peter, spouse Linda Voss of Kent, Washington, sisters-in-law Jan French and Catherine, spouse Mike Banowetz, brother-in-law John, spouse Shirley Goh, mother-in-law Sue Goh, Sue's daughters, Pat, spouse Harv Witzenberg, Judy, spouse Bill Jensen, and Kathy Wittenberg, and many nieces and nephews. Rick was preceded in death by his parents, a brother David Voss, and his father-in-law Richard Gow. Lloyd Joe A. Stevers, 91, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on March 23rd at Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. In agreement with his wishes, cremation will take place and no services will be held. Private family interment will take place at Lisbon Cemetery, Murdoch Funeral Home, and cremation service of Marion is assisting the family. Lyle was born on February 7, 1933, in Pembroke, Virginia, the son of John and Mary Link Stevers, where he lived until he joined the United States Navy. While in the Navy, he met and married Patricia Capano in Richmond, California, until her death in 2007. Lloyd worked for Rockwell Goss, which brought him to Cedar Rapids, until he retired after 30 years of service. Lloyd will be greatly missed by all who knew and loved him. Lloyd is survived and lovingly remembered by his daughter Faith, spouse Lyman Ring of Marion, five grandchildren, Brian, spouse Angie Ring of Cedar Rapids, Christopher, spouse Audrey Ring of Savannah, Georgia, Melissa, spouse Nick Schroeder of Bernard, Iowa, Raven Butteris and Jacqueline Butteris of Marshalltown, and two great-grandchildren, Cameron Ring of Indianapolis and Joseph Ring of Denver, Colorado. He was preceded in death by his parents, wife Patricia Stevers, daughter Patty Jo Butteris, son John Capuano, granddaughter Jolene Butteris, son-in-law Charles Butteris, sisters Kathleen Whitaker and Lois Epling, and brothers Russell Lee, Jesse William, Henry Wiley, Booland David, Charles Donald, Gerald Link, and John Jacob Stevers. Stephanie Gomez Weinbrenner. It is with profound sadness that we announce the passing of Stephanie Gomez Weinbrenner. She left us suddenly on Friday, March 15th, while visiting family in Bogota. It was a beautiful day, and she was her usual joyful self until the very end. Stephanie was in so many ways a unicorn. Born in the Midwest at the end of World War II, she was unique in her ability to remain steady and grounded, espousing so many of those Midwestern values where hard work, dedication to family, and a no-nonsense approach to life prevail, while also exhibiting a profound sense of curiosity, adventure, and openness. She left home at 16 and moved to Chicago to attend the University of Chicago, where she met the love of her life, Annabelle. Together, they moved to Columbia and built a full life of strong family ties and close friendships that continue to this day. Stephanie was the most fearless, determined, warm, kind, elegant, and empathetic person we knew. But to us, she was simply Mom, Grandma, Sugrit. She built our family, brought us all together, and always did so with an open heart. She was and always will be our true north. She will be sorely missed by everyone whose lives she touched. Stephanie is survived by her sister Diana, her children Christina, Patricia, Miguel, and Carolina. Daughter-in-law Johanna, and sons-in-law Luis Enrique, Luis Eduardo, and Corey. Grandkids Juan Felipe, Esteban, Nicolas, Tomas, Santiago, Camilla, Lucas, and Sofia. Nieces and nephews. Memorial services took place in Bogota, Colombia on March 22nd. Phyllis M. Marek of Swisher was 82 when she passed away peacefully Friday, March 22nd at Solon Nursing and Rehab. Visitation will be held at from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 27th at Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. Sorry about that. Bowling Street Southwest. Celebration of Life services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, March 28th at Brosh Chapel. Burial will take place in Anderson Cemetery. Phyllis was born August 2nd, 1941 in Walford, the daughter of William and Helen Schulte Rotter. She graduated from Walford High School in 1959, and in 1960 she married the love of her life, Bernard Merrick. They moved to a farm in Swisher, where they started their family. Phyllis was a stay-at-home mom, where she kept house, a large garden, loved to cook, and spent time with her children, Chris and Susan. In 1979, Phyllis went to work as a bank teller with Swisher Trust and Savings Bank. Over the years, she held several positions and finally retired after 34 years of service as a bank officer. She loved being a grandmother and always made sure that the holidays at Grandma's house would be memorable for the grandkids. Throughout her life, Phyllis always held a connection and love for all of her dog children, with her last being Greta, her special Pomeranian girl that went to heaven to wait with Bernie a couple of months ago. She is survived by her son Chris, spouse Penny Merrick, and her daughters Susan, spouse Kevin Jones, Merrick Jones. She is also survived by five grandchildren, Adam, Kate, Jennifer, Justin, and Joshua, three step-grandchildren, Casey, Natasha, and Stephanie, seven great-grandchildren, five step-great-grandchildren, one great-great-granddaughter, sister Shirley Schulte, sister-in-law Linda Rotter, brother-in-law Daryl, spouse Carolyn Merrick, as well as many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death. She is preceded in death by her parents, her husband Bernard, her mother and father-in-law Martha and Joseph Merrick, two sisters Mary and Donna, her brother Jim Rotter, several brothers-in-law, a niece, and several nephews. And Lyle J. Pritchard, 89 in McGregor, died March 21st at Harmony of Waterloo in Waterloo. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, March 28th at the Grace United Methodist Church in Olwine. Visitation is from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home in Olwine, and for 1 hour before the service at the church on Thursday. Interment will be at Floral Hills Memorial Gardens in rural Olwine, Graveside Military Honors by the U.S. Army Honor Guard. Okay, I'm going to turn to the sports section and talk about what you can catch today in sports. In the area, boys soccer, the Metro Jamboree is at Kingston. Girls soccer, Regina at Solon at 5:30 p.m. There's a boys golf match at Mid Prairie at Regina. At Brown Deer at 4 p.m. Girls golf, Regina at Mid Prairie in Kelowna at 4 p.m. On television, in the NBA, Celtics are at the Hawks at 6:30 p.m. on NBA TV. Wizards at Bulls at 7 p.m. on NBCS Chicago, 76ers at Kings at 9 p.m. on NBA TV. You can catch an NBL spring training game today, the Cardinals at the Cubs, at 3 p.m. Women's lacrosse, at 3 p.m., that's on the Marquee channel. And women's lacrosse, Northwestern at North Carolina at 3:30 p.m. on ESPNU. And I'm going to see if I can find the women's basketball games today, where that article is. Here we go. Okay, so tonight's game, number 2, Iowa, whose record is 30-4, is taking on West Virginia, whose record is 25-7. That's the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament second round. It's taking place at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City. Tip-off is at 7 p.m., and you can catch it on TV on ESPN, or you can live stream it on ESPN.com, or if you have the ESPN app. You can also listen to it on the Hawkeye Radio Network affiliates. Iowa's next game, the winner faces number 15 Kansas State or number 17 Colorado in the regional semifinals Saturday at Albany, New York. Let's see. It says what you need to know. Well, Albany is 2. Top seed Iowa takes its nation-leading scoring offense into a match with the stingy 8-seed Mountaineers. West Virginia leads the nation in turnover margin and is 3rd in turnovers forced and steals. The Hawkeyes are seeking their 10th Sweet 16 appearance, their second straight. Caitlin Clark scored 27 points, sending her career total to 3,798, and added 8 rebounds and 10 assists. Kate Martin added 15 points and 14 rebounds. Hannah Stolke missed the second half due to a migraine, but Addison O'Grady picked up the slack with 14 points on 7 of 9 shooting. West Virginia's defense was on full display in the third quarter of a 63-53 first-round win over Princeton. The Mountaineers allowed 7 points in the third, turning a 26-24 deficit into a 42-33 advantage. Janiyah Quinerly scored 29 points, and WVU shot 52.5% from the field. The Mountaineers started the season 13-0 and at 12-6 in the Big 12. They finished in a tie for fourth place. Their only Sweet 16 appearance came in 1992. Iowa leads the all-time series 4-1. The last meeting was in 2019 with an 84-81 victory at the Junkanoo Jam, in which the Hawkeyes rallied from a 24-point deficit. So that's what we have to look forward to. And that is, again, at 7 p.m. this evening. Okay, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.